Welcome to today's quarterly All Employment Network call. My name is Derek Shields and I'll serve as the moderator for today's meeting. Before we begin with our agenda, I have a few logistics and housekeeping items that I'd like to cover. First, this meeting is being recorded and transcription is also being captured. To some other specific logistics on the screen, please remain muted at all times during the call, unless called upon by our moderator. Please feel free to ask a question in the MS Teams chat section, as we already had happen, which will be moderated by SSA and TPM. We'll respond to questions as they come in, or if they need to be held, we'll keep that to the last 25 to 30 minutes, which is a Q&A interactive section. If joining via phone and you wish to ask a question, please raise your hand utilizing star 5 and you will be unmuted by the facilitator. You will then need to be using star 6 to unmute yourself. This is a two-step process and we'll assist you through that two-step process. We do ask you to limit your questions to one per participant. Additional questions or comments can be sent to us via email at enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Those questions that are not answered during the live event will be forwarded to the appropriate panelists for comment, and we'll be able to provide some of those responses through the follow-up notes we provide. Closed captioning is being available today for participants who join using the MS Teams application or utilizing a separate closed caption link provided. This was provided before in chat and can be provided again. To turn on closed captioning in Teams, please go to the three ellipses in the top of the MS Teams window. It also has more or more actions listed there, and go down to the list of turn on live captions. When using the link option, please paste the link in your browser and it will open up a separate window to view the closed captions. We thank you all for your participation and attendance today, and appreciate your time and attention. With that, to the next slide, please. Before we turn to our first presenters, I would like to review our call agenda. Again, today's call will be from 1 p.m. Eastern Time to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time for 90 minutes, with about 1 hour of presentations. We'll begin with an update from Social Security provided by Mr. Robert Paff. Next, Ms. Kara Kaplan will provide some EN updates and reminders, followed by a topic that was requested by an EN, medical and work continuing disability reviews by Mary Ellie Lopez. Following that, we'll actually have some questions and answers directly then for Mary Ellie and her colleague, Christine. Next, we'll have Mary Lynn Revoir from the American Dream Employment Network, or ADEN, provide a short presentation on their annual report. And following that, we have a presentation on updates from the National Disability Rights Network from Cheryl Bates Harris. I'll come back after Cheryl and provide some updates on the ticket program communication and outreach. And as I mentioned, we'll have a final segment that will be open Q&A. So please provide your questions as we go along for presenters, and know that we'll have a portion at the end where we'll look to raise hands and open up your audio line so you can engage directly with our presenters. Next slide, please. Now let's turn to our first agenda topic, Social Security updates. In this segment, we will hear from Robert Paff and Mike Corso. After Rob and Mike are done, we will have time for questions for both of these presenters. It is now my pleasure to introduce Mr. Robert Paff, Director, Office of Employment Support and Social Security's Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. Rob?
Thank you, Derek, and good afternoon and or good morning to all of you. Thank you for joining us today. We have a lot of topics to cover. A lot of good information. Derek, thank you for walking us through this new process. We hope that you enjoy this. At least with Teams, you will be able to see some of us speak with you directly, which is helpful in this remote environment that we're working in. I'll go ahead and get started. And let me also thank the folks that are presenting today, both from SSA with Mary Ellie and with Mary Lynn and Cheryl. You're going to hear some good information. Just to start, I want to give you an update on the Employment Summit report. I know I've talked about this quite a bit. It is very, very close to being done. It is with our deputy commissioner right now, who is reviewing the document and associated summary information. We anticipate releasing that document shortly. It will go out through our communications channels. We will notify you when it is available, but we do anticipate having it out before the end of the month, hopefully. I'm not going to commit to that, but that's our hope. Within that document, what you'll see is a summary of the summit that we held virtually, 2-day summit. We have a synopsis of the discussions that occurred among our EN and VR partners as well as our federal partners. And the document will include recommendations and links to resources that were identified during the 2-day session. So we hope that it's useful for you. We hope that you can refer to it and that it will help you tap into some of those resources to assist your clients return to work. One thing that we talk about in the summary report is the Abilities to Careers Technical Virtual Academy and the Talent Acquisition Portal. And so right now, what I want to do is turn it over to Mr. Mike Corso, who is going to reiterate and share, for those of you who may not have heard previously, some opportunities that are available to you. So, Mike, if you'd like to go ahead, and then I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity to have me on here to offer this to the ENs. As I said, my name is Mike Corso. I operate Disabled Person, Inc. and the Talent Acquisition Network and the ACT Academy. Just to give you a little update, we presented to the ENs at the end of last year for the ACT Academy. We current as of the 18th of May, we had 117 EN candidates in the Academy. Of the 117, 36% of the students completed at least one course, 48% are in progress as we speak, and 16% haven't started the courses of yet. So we've got a real robust response, and I'm here to tell you today that if you want to still participate, we have until August 31st of this year for the pilot program, and we'll take as many individuals as you want. There's still time for a student to come in and complete a course. We have 3 months left. So you see my name and my email on the screen here with my phone number. Feel free to reach out and send over your beneficiaries if you have them. We're happy to take them. We're happy to help. It's going great. We operate that through the GoOne platform and also the Teams, Microsoft Teams. We now have 3 teacher's assistants to help the individuals. And GoOne has a wonderful support system. You know, sometimes there are technical issues, but the support is right on top of them. So we have we're happy with how things are going. And like I said, we want to help as many people as we can. So feel free to give me a call, send an email, and send over your beneficiaries. With regards to the Talent Acquisition Portal, again, we made that available for 2022 to the ENs. We currently, as of the 18th of May, had 1,713 beneficiaries in the portal. We have, so far in May, we've had 67 people apply for positions. Last month, we had 53 people apply for positions. I don't know the outcomes of those because nobody has told us, but we have over 400,000 jobs streaming on tap at the moment. And come on, just, you know, let me know and we'll sign you up. And for those of you who have signed up on tap and haven't inputted your, you know, your beneficiaries, if you need help, just give me a call and, you know, we'll be happy to help you get started with that. We also are going to be holding a virtual job fair in July. We're bringing on, you know, employers with national footprints. And if you want your beneficiaries to participate in that, they have to be enrolled in TAP with a resume, a published resume. So again, my name is Mike Corso. My email is mike@disabledperson.com. My phone, 760-420-1269. We're happy to help. Send over your beneficiaries and we'll do what we can to help you help them get back to work. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mike. And really the most tangent opportunity really for ENs working with their beneficiaries to engage in something, have their, and one thing you may have touched on this, but the opportunity to have a screened, qualified, job-ready candidate who would take this kind of training and make the most of it would be a tremendous candidate. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity, and I'm appreciative of your efforts. We'll pause for a second and take questions, Derek, if you however you want to manage this piece.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Mike. Yes, we've shared this instruction in chat, and I'll read it now. To ask a question via Teams, you can use chat or raise your hand tools. If we use raise the hand in chat, we will call on you and unmute your line. Via phone, please raise your hand by using *5, and you will then need to be unmuted by our facilitator, a two-step process. You also could send a question in through email at enoperations@yourtickettowork.gov. It does look like we have a hand raised, so let's go to that option. If I could ask Nicole to identify that person for us, please. Stand by. We have a telephone number ending in 7811. I think you've
Sorry
been
about
unmuted.
That. I couldn't get off mute. My apologies.
It's okay. So we've unmuted 7811. If you would like to speak, you can proceed. Well, doesn't look like they're coming off of mute. We'll try it one more time. Telephone number ending in 7811.
I apologize. I did not get Mike's telephone number, and could he just briefly tell us what that program is? I'm pretty new to the EN.
Sure. My phone number is up on the screen. It's 760-420-1269. The Academy is a virtual Academy. It's all remote online, and what we're doing is giving the opportunity for individuals with disabilities to train in IT certifications, right? And this is for entry-level IT certifications, and they can have stackable credentials. The course is offered. There's digital literacy. There's Microsoft Office Specialist, Microsoft 365 Fundamentals, Microsoft Teams Administrator, Microsoft Azure Fundamentals. There's CompTIA, A plus, Network plus, and Security plus. That's the first year. And yes, it is free up until August 31st. That's why we're on here. We have licenses left that we're willing to give out. And they can go through and finish. There's time for them to finish a course. And we're happy to get as many people as we can.
Thank you, Mike. This is Derek. Just to follow up again, if we have any more questions for Mike and or Robert Paff, please provide those through chat, or you could raise your hand on the Teams app or use *5 to raise your hand through a telephone. Mike, there's a couple questions that have come in. One, what is the cost projected after August?
So after August, it's going to be $500 for a year. And that's for as many courses as they want to take. We're keeping it at bare minimum just to pay the bills and keep the lights on. Our objective here is to help train people and get them to work.
Thanks. And then a follow on, Mike, can they still remain with their original EN?
Yes, we're not an EN. We're doing this to help. There's no tickets assigned to us.
Thank you. And then can Mike, one last question here. What does the process look like for them to sign up?
I just need a referral from the EN with the individual's name and contact information. And then that's it. And I need the course which they would like to take. So if you're interested, send me an email and I'll send you the course catalog and explain how we move forward.
Thanks for that. And as a reminder, you can email Mike at mike@disabledperson.com. Mike, a final question here. Who pays the $500 when that fee goes into effect?
Whoever has the money. It could be the individual or that's between, the EN and the individual.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for that. Again, mike@disabledperson.com. You can learn more and continue to take advantage of the opportunity through August at no cost. We appreciate your time. I want to circle back to Mr. Paff one more time. Rob, do you have any other comments or closing remarks before we turn to the next section?
No, I do not. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you both for being with us today. And with that, we'll conclude the SSA updates.
Thank you.
Now we're going to turn to our next segment of today's call. I'm pleased to welcome Ms. Kara Kaplan to the All-EN call. Kara is the branch chief for the Office of Employment Support. Kara will provide her updates and will return for questions during the open Q&A section towards the end of the All-EN call. Excuse me. Kara, over to you.
Hi. Thanks, Derek. And good afternoon, everybody. So on April 4th, 2022, as most of you know, the federal government moved from using the Data Universal Numbering System, the DUNS number, to the Unique Entity Identifier, UEI. That happened automatically for existing ENs, so there was nothing that you needed to do at all. We just wanted to remind you that we are no longer using DUNS numbers for payment purposes. You don't need to take any action at all. We've migrated away. We are now using what we call provider ID number, which was what your old DUNS number was as a reference number. So we still have your DUNS number. We call it the PID number, and your UEI number is what the federal government uses for payment purposes. If anybody needs further clarification on that, you can contact enservice@ssa.gov and we can help you, but it's pretty much a behind the scenes thing for you guys. There's some EN training updates. I just wanted to remind everybody about your ticket program agreement requirements for training, and they must be completed within 60 days. Of TPA award or any changes in key personnel. So a lot of ENs have changed key personnel through the years, and they'll send people to training and they'll start it and they're not filtering through the training and they continue to work, and that's not acceptable. We are starting to crack down on all the TPA terms and conditions. So you will receive a one-time notification or a notification that there's time remaining, how much time is remaining to complete your training. It'll go to the learner, the signatory authority, and the program contact. If the learner is non-responsive to the notifications that come from EN development, or they're not progressing through the training, that will result in a cure notice and can lead to termination. During training, ticket portal access for the trainee will be suspended. They are able to go in and play around with it, but they cannot utilize the ticket portal until all training is completed. So that was flipped for everybody who is currently in training. It was communicated to those learners and signatory authorities, and that is how it will work moving forward. For your service and supports reviews, please make sure that all ENs have at least one GSO user and make program integrity aware of who that user is. Maintaining your GSO account, you must log in every 60 days to maintain access. You will be sent reminder emails prior to your service and supports reviews. Please check your GSO box. Requests for SSNs, the official request from the notification will be sent from GSO system 5 days prior to the end of the month preceding your review month. So if your review is for May, April 25th, you'll receive a reminder. Those reviews are due back to Program Integrity within 10 days. Also, for your IWPs, you should be using what we call SMART goals when creating the short-term and long-term goals on the IWP, and that is specific goals, measurable goals, attainable goals, relevant and time-based goals. We should not be seeing the same IWP for all of your ticket holders. They must be individualized. When you're communicating with EN Service, it's very helpful. We would appreciate if you include the EN name, your PID number, and your state abbreviation in the subject line. Our staff is divided by states, and it'll just make your response go a lot more smoothly and timely. And that's all I have, Derek. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kara, for the EN updates and reminders. We appreciate those to assist everyone with their operations. At this point, I know we have a hand raised. What we're going to do is ask you to keep that question until the open Q&A. If you prefer, you can provide it inside the chat, and as you've noticed, Katie will be responding throughout, and that will get you a timely answer now. To continue with our agenda, I'm now pleased to turn to our next topic, continuing disability reviews, medical versus work. It's now my pleasure to welcome Mary Ellie Lopez to the meeting. Mary Ellie is a social insurance specialist and will review a topic that was submitted by an EN for this quarterly meeting. Mary Ellie will present, and then she will accept questions immediately after and will be joined by her colleague, Christine Irwin Tribbett. Over to you, Mary Ellie.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mary Ellie Lopez with the Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. Today, we'll be giving you a short briefing on medical and work continuing disability reviews. The Social Security Administration reviews disability cases periodically to see if a person with a disability still meets SSA disability rules. SSA performs two types of reviews, a medical continuing disability review and a work continuing disability review. Next slide, please. In our first slide, we will discuss medical continuing disability reviews. Medical reviews are performed periodically based on medical diaries. These diaries are established at the time of the initial allowance and after a medical determination. The DDS establishes these diaries based on the individual's impairment. The field office technician will send out a packet of forms to the beneficiary. The packet will include a notice stating we are starting a disability review and ask for medical sources and authorization for release of medical records. From there, evaluation is done to establish the beneficiary's disabling condition has not medically improved. A disabled beneficiary would not have to undergo a medical continuing disability review based on work alone if he or she has received disability benefits for at least 24 months or is participating in the Ticket to Work program. Next slide, please. Under a continuing disability review, SSA looks at earnings to determine if the individual is eligible for monthly benefits to make a substantial gainful activity determination. SGA is a term used to describe the level of work and earnings. Consistently being above this could lead to ineligibility for disability benefits. We generally use these guidelines to evaluate whether your work is SGA. An individual's report of earnings, IRS earnings, or other data sources are events that may initiate a work review. Earnings can be reported by phone, mail, fax, in person, or by completing the SSA 821 or 820 online. The SSA technician develops the work via these forms depending on the type of work. Next slide, please. The technician would then evaluate for work incentives, such as impairment work-related expenses. Maybe the beneficiary has a mental impairment where they need medication to do their job, or maybe they have a physical limitation where they need a wheelchair. We also develop for subsidies special conditions, such as having extra help on the job or a job coach, leading to the trial work period. The trial work period provision gives a disabled beneficiary the chance to test his or her ability to work and hold a job without the threat of losing benefits. It consists of 9 months, which do not have to be consecutive, but completed within a 60-month rolling period. After the trial work, you have 36 months, which you can work and still receive benefits for any month in which your earnings aren't substantial. No new application or disability decision is needed to receive Social Security during this period. This is called the extended period of eligibility. Once development is completed, a due process is generated that gives the beneficiary an opportunity to correct discrepancies before the decision is finalized. Once the decision is processed, a final notice is mailed. If the decision is a continuance, meaning there is no SGA, the notice provides details on the decision. If the decision is an SGA decision, the notice will contain appeal rights on the determination. Lastly, if an overpayment applies, the notice contains appeal rights and waiver rights. All right, does anyone have any questions for me?
Thank you very much, Marielle. We appreciate the review of the content and the comparison of the two. At this time, as I mentioned, we will take questions from Marielle and her colleague, Christine. To do that, please use the raise hand feature on MS Teams application, or you can submit your question through chat, or as described in chat. Thank you, Brittany. You can use *5 on the telephone, and we'll be able to then unmute you, and you could use *6 to unmute yourself. Any questions on continuing disability reviews? While we give folks a second, I will just share that these slides are now available online at the Ticket Program Manager site under events, where the All-EN call slides go. And they will be shared afterwards as part of the notes. So you'll be able to access this content. Somebody asked if they could have access to the slides. We do have a question, Marielle, in the chat. Are timely progress reviews in suspense? And then if you're able to access the chat questions, you can feel free to respond if you'd like.
Hi, this is Christine. I just want to step in real quick about the question about timely progress reviews in suspense. Timely progress reviews are related to the ticket program. What we're discussing here is work and medical CDRs that are done outside of the ticket program. So these are our normal policies that we file, one, to make sure the person is still eligible for benefits, both whether they have a medical disability or whether they're working over SGA. So for timely progress reviews, Patrice, do you want to step in to finish it?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Christine. Yes, SSA conducts timely progress reviews periodically.
and we don't normally send out notifications of when we're conducting those reviews. So it's important to make sure that you are working with your ticket holders to always be ready to respond to a request for a timely progress review, because you never know when exactly that's going to come up. So it's always best to be prepared.
Thank you very much. This is Derek. Thank you very much, Patrice and Christine, for tag teaming there on that response. Nicole, I wanted to go to you. I believe we have a meeting guest with their hand raised.
Yes, we do. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, we have Janine Culver.
Great. Janine, are you able to ask your question, please? Well, we'll see if we can get Janine back. She had her hand raised. If you do have a question for Mary Ellie or Christine, please consider dropping in a chat or using your raised hand. All right. Well, I think that does it for that section of today's call. We'd like to thank Mary Ellie. Whoop, Janine's trying again. Let's go back and see if we can get Janine to ask her question before our presenters have to leave. Janine, go ahead and try to unmute yourself. Well, unfortunately, that's not working. She's unable to unmute, and I believe you're on the application. If, with that being the case, I'd encourage you to submit. Well, we'll try one last time. Otherwise, I encourage you to submit through chat. We do have a question coming in from Whitney Willis. If you're able to ask your question now, Whitney, go ahead.
Hi, Whitney,
microphone.
Star 6 to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Whitney. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. My speakers got muted. Sorry.
We can hear you now. Go ahead and ask your question.
I was going back to the work continuing disability review. Could you give me an example of a SMART goal for the IWP? I know it's not related. It's not exactly related to the continuing disability review, but could you give me an example of like a wording wise for SMART goals on IWPs?
Thank you, Whitney. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold that question and we're going to bring it up as our first question in the open Q&A.
Okay, perfect.
So we appreciate you submitting it, and I have it marked down, and we'll bring back Kara and or Katie to assist with that one. Thanks for the question. Mm-hmm. All right, so thank you very much, Mary Ellie and Christine, for joining us today. We appreciate your time for joining the All In call. And with that, we're now going to move to our next presenter. Mary Lynn Revoir is the co-founder and co-director of the American Dream Employment Network, or ADEN. Mary Lynn will provide us with an overview of the ADEN annual report, and Mary Lynn will also join us following all the presentations for the open Q&A period. With that, over to you, Mary Lynn.
Well, thank you, Derek, and thank you to Social Security for the invitation to present on the American Dream EN annual report. To begin, I wanted to share some general information in regards to annual report with the next slide. What is an annual report? Well, it is a brief document that summarizes and reviews your outcomes or performances of the year's business activity. Here at the American Dream Employment Network, we feel there's lots of benefits of writing an annual report for the business that we're conducting. It can be used for marketing our employment network to beneficiaries and other interested stakeholders. It also identifies strengths and helps us establish future business goals. If you're like us, you often may get inquiries from a variety of different types of readers. And it to have all of this information into one document, it's a time saver, so you can distribute the information to a variety of readers. There are also some funders or accrediting bodies who do require or favor being able to see your annual report. So it can be an advantage if you have that particular product available to show them. It identifies information that you want to share. There might be statistical data that you want to pass on to interested stakeholders. And that data, you can list the data, so it could show trends or histories, or it may contain some new data to reflect a current or unique situation. For an example, during the peak of the pandemic, you know, you might want to be able to share what you've learned and what was the experience of the activity level of your business. You will need some type of a data collection tool in order to generate the information so you can create it into this findings. We do have a secured portal, and that portal contains all of our business data as well as case management. You're going to need to also decide what data do you want to track, how often you're going to collect the data, and when are you going to collect it. The next slide explains specifics to our EN annual report. So the next slide, please. We start out by this overview. Throughout the year, we're collecting information. So it's not something you just wait and do at the end of the year. It's going to be a process throughout the year. The data is collected quarterly with a final pull at the end of the year. And then that information is converted into the report annually in the month of January. We distribute the report then in February to stakeholders. It's common that we give it to our board of directors. We post it on our website for the general public, so ticket holders can see this information, as well as beneficiaries who haven't assigned their ticket to us. We send it to our employer partners. We also send it to SSA and a few other interested parties. What is the content of our annual report? Well, we start off with an opening section that is related to our mission statement and the measurements of success. And this year, we identified three of those measures. The first one is individuals with disabilities are on a path out of poverty through employment. Our second one is beneficiaries who leave the SSA disability roles due to employment create a savings to the SSA trust fund and contribute to the federal tax base. And our third measurement is Aiden's core services exceed industry standards and are effective. The next slide describes the remaining section of the report, which is basically statistical findings. We look at beneficiary profile, information such as what's the average age, what is the percentage of individuals receiving Social Security disability insurance versus SSI. We summarize what's the educational background of the beneficiaries that have assigned their ticket with us. And then we move into employment outcomes. What's the top five industries that the ticket that are assigned to us are have employment in? And what's the percentage of individuals who are placed on the job? I think we're currently running around 63% of those who have assigned their ticket are employed. And what's the average length of time from the time they're assigned to the time they're placed? Then we look into productivity. What type of service do we provide to our ticket holders? What's the most common service? What's the frequency of services? How much time do we spend on an average? And because we are an administrative employment network versus a traditional employment network, we then provide a profile of our service providers who operate under our umbrella. So this describes the Aiden affiliates. Hopefully that overview, which is brief, will provide you some insight. So if you decide to do an annual report next year, you have the beginnings of getting that started. Again, feel free to contact me. My name is Mary Lynn Revor. My phone number is 202-785-2373. Myself and my colleague, Kevin Nickerson, are co-founders and co-directors of the American Dream Employment Network that began in 2015. So with that, I'll wrap it up and I'll turn it back over to Derek.
Thank you very much for that overview of the Aiden Annual Report. We appreciate your time, Mary Lynn, and your experience in creating the annual report. We did drop Mary Lynn's contact information, including phone number, inside of chat, and it is also available in the slides, which is posted on the TPM EN event page. So with that, it's now my pleasure to move to our next presenter. We have our topic is going to be the National Disability Rights Network updates, and we are pleased to be able to welcome with us today Cheryl Bates Harris, a senior disability advocacy specialist at the National Disability Rights Network. We look forward to your update, Cheryl. Over to you.
Thank you, Derek, and thank you, Social Security, for allowing me to join you today. If you go to the next slide, please, I'd like to explain what National Disability Rights Network is. The National Disability Rights Network is actually the membership organization of the protection and advocacy programs that are nationwide. So what the heck is protection and advocacy? It's a network of legal-based legal-based advocates and attorneys that receive federal funding under 9 different pieces of legislation. So most of them are nonprofit organizations that provide services to people with disabilities so that they are exempt from abuse, neglect, and discrimination based on disability. They were originally started after Geraldo Rivera did the expose on the Willowbrook Training School. So NDRN, as the membership organization, provides training and technical assistance to the individual PNAs. And one of the programs that is funded, of course, is from Social Security. It's the protection and advocacy for beneficiaries of Social Security. So that program was funded under the Ticket to Work and Work Incentives Improvement Act, as were most of the other programs. And our purpose is to kind of help people remove barriers to employment so that they can go back to work. And I really like what Mary Lynn Revor said, because my big motivating thing for beneficiaries is always, if you want to live in poverty for the rest of your life, then stay on benefits. Otherwise, let us help you remove those barriers. So there is a protection and advocacy in every state and territory across the country, all 50 states, the District of Columbia, territories. We also have a Native American Protection and Advocacy Agency that serves the Four Corners region of the country on the large Native American reservation areas. We're legal-based advocates. The programs are run by attorneys and supervised by attorneys. So we're a legal-based organization, not a social service organization. And we are probably the only organization in the country that is really a true cross-disability. We provide services to individuals with all kinds of disabilities, and we are actually the largest enforcer of civil rights outside of the federal government. So we don't usually get a lot of people come and tell us the good things that are going on, but we know there are good things that are going on. We get the people who come to us with problems and barriers and legal issues, and our job is to help resolve them. So the next slide, please. What we offer is really a continuum of remedies. Although we are legal-based services and legal-based organizations, We very rarely actually have to resort to litigation. We provide services starting with informations and referrals. When people come to us with problems or issues, we help them kind of identify or give them the information that they might need in order to self-advocate. And if we can't do, you know, the self-advocacy isn't enough, then we will go to a higher level of services for that individual. We make a lot of referrals to other organizations, sometimes for support they need, or sometimes if they're just looking for opportunities or other places to engage. In order to do that, we provide a lot of outreach with particular focus to unserved and underserved populations. So again, when we collect our data, we're looking at who is not getting services. Are there certain populations of people that may not be coming to us, etc. So we do a lot of outreach and we do a lot of community-based training, training to parents, training to organizations, training to special education teachers. We know what the civil rights laws are that protect people with disabilities, such as the ADA and the promise of non-discrimination, what school systems are supposed to provide to students with disabilities, how transition is supposed to occur. We do a lot of work around vocational rehabilitation and accessing services. So we know what the laws are and we know what the regs say and we know what the rules and regulations are. So when we provide that training and that outreach, again, it's oftentimes so that individuals can self-advocate. But if they can't, then they can come to us and we will discuss their situation, provide counsel to them, and advise them of what their next steps or their strategy ought to be. And then we can also assist them with negotiation and mediation with whatever the problematic agency or situation might be. So we'll do a lot of negotiation and mediation, and that includes mediation, both capital M, which means we do it utilizing a third-party neutral mediator, or informal mediation between the advocate and the attorney and or the individual in the organization. When we are unable to resolve things at that particular level, we then have the legal authority and legal ability to proceed to administrative proceedings within the state. And so again, that gives us, we're going a little step higher each time. If during an administrative proceeding, such as a fair hearing or a hearing with an administrative law judge within a certain agency, we are also able and capable to do individual litigation on behalf of the individual. So if, again, the individual litigation may or may not be successful, again, depending on the merit of the case, it may decide what the next steps are. Another thing that we do an awful lot of is monitoring programs to make sure that they're complying with the rules, regulations, and non-discriminatory provisions of law. So things like vocational rehabilitation, if they're denying services or choice of vocational objective, whatever. We do a lot of monitoring and oversight, again, just to make sure and to keep programs honest. We also do an awful lot of systemic litigation because we know from experience that situations are oftentimes not just one, they're affecting more than one client or more than one individual. And it's much easier to address the systemic problem than to go through a lot of individual cases to resolve a problem or a situation that's a result of an improper policy or discriminatory policy, whatever. And systemic litigation or systemic work can involve systemic litigation, can also involve just working with the administration or the agencies to address a policy or a practice that's having a negative impact on individuals with disabilities. We also do a lot of public policy work. We have policy staff within our agency that works with all of the various administrations. Although my specialty is employment of people with disabilities, we have individuals that work primarily with just special education. We have individuals that work with the criminal justice system. We have individuals that work with vocational rehabilitation, assistive technology, all kinds of things. And a couple of the new areas that NDRN overall is expanding into involves both fire safety issues and human trafficking. So any issue that affects a person with a disability, as we obtain additional funding, we certainly expand as broad as we can in order to have the greatest opportunity for people with disabilities to engage in their community in a non-discriminatory fashion. And of course, the other piece of that is legislative advocacy. Public policy, working with the administrations, you know, Department of Housing, Department of Transportation, those things are all well and good, but sometimes we actually have to fix the public laws that are creating these situations. So we, again, have staff that work with Hill staff primarily to tweak or improve the public policy and the laws that are available to improve, again, the full inclusion and integration of people with disabilities into the community. So the next slide, please. I know that's a lot to understand, so I want to give you some examples of the PAVS kinds of issues that we address. We are kind of a sister program to the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Programs, but their specialty is to provide benefits counseling and a benefits analysis so people understand what work is all about. We do things that they can't do. We provide legal-based advocacy to address issues and barriers that still exist, unfortunately, in the community. And of course, the first of that is discrimination. Discrimination is good and business is, discrimination is alive and well and business is good. So we do, we can address issues of discrimination both in the application process, the hiring process, and the various phases of employment. So assuring things that individuals are getting reasonable accommodations that are necessary for them to be able to be otherwise qualified for the work they're doing, those kinds of things. We, with computers now readily available and computer kiosks to apply for jobs, that doesn't always work for people with disabilities. And the computers may not have the technology or the software programs to allow equal access. So those are frequently kinds of things that we end up doing in the PABS work. We also want to assure that individuals have access to the services and supports of various provider agencies, including the state vocational rehabilitation agencies, the American Job Centers or the One Stops, various apprenticeship programs and other workforce programs. Although people with disabilities will often go to vocational rehabilitation or require VR services, there's a lot of people with disabilities who don't actually need VR services. They may just need access to a job program or a support service. And so places like the American Job Centers need to be accessible to people with visual impairments and or people and or other people who may not, you know, be able to operate just a standard computer. So again, ensuring access to these kinds of supports and services is something we look at. We assist individuals with appeals on issues when requested or required. Individuals will come to us with a complaint. We'll try to resolve it informally. If that doesn't happen, we will assist them with the appeals process all the way through to litigation if required to protect their rights under the law. So I think I already mentioned this about assuring individuals get needed accommodations both in the education setting, in employment settings, and other work-based learning experiences. So, you know, we are there to advocate on their behalf, to inform employers and providers about their legal obligations, as well as to make it clear to individuals what is a reasonable accommodation. Oftentimes, the issue comes down to the individual with the disability might want the Cadillac version of something, the employer wants to provide the Volkswagen version of the accommodation. And so, again, we remind and work with the parties to understand that reasonable accommodation is derived through an interactive process. It's not a this is what we'll give you or this is what or this is all I'm going to accept, that it requires a communication and engagement in that process. And then the final bullet point I have here is that we will often address systemic issues that prevent individuals from work, such as poor paratransit services. If public transportation is not available, the individual relies on paratransit, and paratransit is notoriously late, or their bus lifts do not operate, so that, you know, in essence, the person is being denied access to the transportation because the lift is broken and they can't get on or off the transportation. A lot of issues around housing. Individuals with disabilities have varying needs of support. And if a housing unit says, no, you can't have handicapped parking placard, and the individual has to walk, you know, a quarter mile to their parking, through their parking lot in order to get into their vehicle, or the housing unit says you can't have a 24-hour nursing support if that is what's needed. So we address all kinds of issues with housing. It's not just finding people's housing, because we don't really do that. It's making sure that the housing rules and policies don't indirectly or directly have a disparate impact on people with disabilities. And of course, there's a whole range of healthcare issues, access to Medicaid, access to Medicare, access to durable medical equipment, who's going to pay for that, as well as assistive technology. A lot of assistive technology is pretty simple, but the question is always, it's not our responsibility to pay for it. So helping people figure out what funding is available and how do we modify the policies around insurance covering assistive technology or durable medical equipment. So those are some very, very broad examples, but I just wanted to make people aware that the protection and advocacy agencies are out there. We no longer really call them protection and advocacy. We call them disability rights, Disability Rights Pennsylvania, Disability Rights New Jersey. We have, I think, 37 states that have converted to that. There's a couple P&A agencies that still have very, very strange names, and therefore I think they could be the best kept secret. We have Equip for Equality in Illinois and the Georgia Advocacy Office. But if anybody wants to find your local protection and advocacy agency, you can go to our NDRN website, which is just ndrn.org. That will bring you to our homepage. If you click on About Us, it will bring up a map of the United States, and you can then identify what your protection and advocacy agency is there. And if you have any trouble with that, people are welcome to contact me. My work number, and I hope somebody will put this into the chat box for me, please, is area code 202-408-1950. Sorry, I haven't been in the office in so long. And my extension is extension 117. And if you call and leave a message in my office, that will forward to my email as a message. So feel free, if you have questions, to reach out. And thank you very much. Turn it back to Derek.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. There's been quite a bit of positive response in chat to your presentation and the content. So we thank you for your time today, and importantly, for your longtime commitment and work over the years. Cheryl will be back with us at the open Q&A right after my remarks. So please, if you have questions that haven't been answered, we captured a few of those, but we encourage you to bring those back momentarily. If we can move forward with the slides, please. I will now take a few minutes to provide some updates on our final two topics, the first being the Affordable Connectivity Program, that's coming out of the Federal Communications Commission, and then afterwards I'll provide some ticket program outreach updates. Next slide, please. So if you haven't heard of the Affordable Connectivity Program, we wanted to make you aware of that today. It's called the Affordable Connectivity Program, or ACP, and it's coming from the Federal Communications Commission. It's a benefit program that's really trying to increase broadband access to more households. It's going to ensure that households can be more likely to afford broadband access for work, school, healthcare, or other purposes. The benefit provides a discount of up to $30 per month towards internet service and for those qualifying households, and up to $75 per month for households on qualifying tribal lands. Eligible households can also receive a one-time discount for up to $100 to purchase not just a broadband, but a laptop, a desktop computer, or a tablet from participating providers if they can contribute more than $10 and less than $50 towards the purchase price. This program is limited to one monthly service discount and one device discount for each household. Next slide, please. So who is eligible? A household is eligible for the connectivity program if the household income is at or below 200% of the federal poverty guidelines, or if a member of the household meets at least one of these criteria, participates in a certain assistance program such as SNAP, Medicaid, Federal Public Housing Assistance, SSI, WIC, or Lifeline, participates in a tribal-specific program such as the Bureau of Indian Affairs General Assistance, Tribal TANF, or the Food Distribution Program that is on Indian reservations, participates in the National School Lunch Program or the School Breakfast Program, including through the USDA Community Eligibility Provision, received a federal Pell Grant during the current award year, or finally meets the eligibility criteria for participating providers' existing low-income internet program. So those are the eligibility criteria. Next slide, please. How can you share this information? We recommend familiarizing yourself with the program so you can inform eligible ticket holders about these discounts and options to increase access to broadband services. There are 10 tips for outreach providers that you can continue to share in your community, and we encourage you to visit the ACP Consumer Outreach Toolkit. And there is a newsletter blurb. We all love blurbs, but you can pull that from the toolkit in order to share and increase and really amplify this program's availability to qualifying and eligible ticket holders. You can find that at AC. Well, next slide, please. They do have in their toolkit these two social media posts that we encourage you to use if you're on social. There's a Facebook post and a Twitter post, and we really encourage you to go to fcc.gov/ACP, fcc.gov/ACP, and to use the hashtag broadband for all. So you can find more content at fcc.gov/ACP and hashtag broadband for all. Next slide, please. Well, thanks for that. We wanted to support the work coming out of the Federal Communications Commission. And as I mentioned, we also wanted to provide you some ticket to work communications and outreach updates. So I'll now enter that content. Next slide, please. First, tomorrow, Wednesday, May 25th, we're hosting our next WISE webinar. These are online events designed to explain the ticket program and work incentives through accessible learning platforms. Most of you probably are familiar that we hold these on the fourth Wednesday of each month, and on average, attendance ranges between 400 to 600 individuals, and it really depends on the topic. Tomorrow, we'll be covering expanding your job search with Ticket to Work. We'll feature a focus on Section 503 for federal contractors, and we'll also look at federal employment through the Schedule A Hiring Authority, and a final focus on apprenticeships. The ticket program manager does send out sample social media posts for all ENs to share every month through our Gov Delivery. Hopefully you've received that, and we do encourage you to share and amplify our WISE events. We also wanted to give you a sneak peek about what was coming around the corner. Next slide, please. Our next WISE webinars in June will focus on Ticket to Work for people with mental illness. This webinar includes an overview of the ticket program and really builds in content specific to people who have mental illness. This is one of our largest audiences and is important as they receive disability benefits that we find ways for pathways to work, including recovery through work. In July, on July 27th, we'll focus on reasonable accommodations in the Ticket to Work program. We'll have a presenter discuss reasonable accommodations and how they can help people succeed at work. And then in August, we'll have Think Outside the Office, looking at blue-collar employment and work opportunities. And this was something that was requested through some earlier reactions to some Facebook work and blog series posts. Next slide, please. As many of you follow us on Choose Work social media, we'd like to encourage you to continue to not just attend our events, but also to share and like and amplify what is happening here. TPM schedules daily social media posts on Facebook and Twitter, and we promote and highlight blog posts, the ticket program resources and fact sheets, the WISE webinars we covered, our success stories and stepping stone stories, along with important Social Security updates and other relevant information coming from federal partner agencies. We'll cover those ways of how to contact and follow these accounts, but really the ask here is to like and share content you find appropriate with ticket holders so the word can get to those that haven't heard yet about Ticket to Work and other work incentives. Next slide, please. I mentioned fact sheets. We would like to ask you this month to share and amplify the fact sheet on Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act. This is our feature in tomorrow's WISE event in expanding work and looking at federal contractors for work pathways. In June, we ask you to share and amplify another fact sheet, Benefits Counseling and the Path to Employment, that will help answer ticket holders' questions about how work will impact their benefits. Both of those links for those fact sheets were just posted in chat. Next slide, please. I mentioned success stories. We have success stories featuring individuals who have achieved financial independence with the help of the ticket program. We also have a series of stepping stone stories featuring individuals who have made a major step on the path to financial independence, but have not yet eliminated their reliance on the benefits. And we encourage you to explore those and share those. Next slide. One of such story is Shirley's story. We have a picture here of Shirley on the screen, African-American woman smiling. And it says here, it took several years of combination of strategies and treatment for Shirley to manage her narcolepsy and depression. But once she did, she knew she wanted to return to work, and the ticket helped her reach her goals. Importantly, a benefits counselor helped Shirley, benefits counselor with America Works. And, you know, Shirley found answers to questions about how work would impact her benefits, and so she could focus on finding a job. And here we want to amplify this message as we go into June and our themes around employment and mental health and the notion of building out of May being Mental Health Awareness Month. And that really, this work is year-round, not just in May. So we encourage you to support and amplify Shirley's success story. Next slide, please. How can you share these success stories? As I mentioned, you can promote them on your social media. You can become familiar with the stories themselves and really the storylines and identify which ones would be appropriate to share with ticket holders you encounter, those ticket holders with a similar background of the success or stepping stone stories. Specifically to align with our mental health focus in June, we encourage you to share the stories we have listed here. Shirley, as I mentioned, we also have Lisa's and Cherry's success story. If you have a question around any of this content, we encourage you to reach out for sample social media posts or some assistance to socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, we're on social media. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You could watch our videos on YouTube. We encourage you, if you haven't done so yet, to subscribe to the Gov Delivery updates and to the Choose Work blog. And again, if you have any questions around these updates, we encourage you to reach out via socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. Next slide, please. So we appreciate your time and listening to our ticket program outreach updates. We now come to our final segment of today's quarterly All-EN call, and this is the open Q&A period. We've been grateful to you for your patience. Some of you have had some questions that you've held. And so at this point, I'll just go to remind you of how you can ask a question. Over the phone, you can raise your hand by dialing *5. You will be unmuted by the facilitator. It will call on you, and then you will need to press *6 to unmute yourself. In MS Teams, you can enter your question in the chat, or you can use the raise hand feature. When we call on you, you will still need to unmute yourself in the upper right corner next to the camera and mic button on Teams. So please recall to unmute yourself when called upon. And so with that, I'm going to check in with Nicole to see if we have had any raised hands or questions come across. Nicole?
So far, there are no raised hands.
Great.
And
thanks for checking.
And there's nothing new in the chat.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate that. I want to go back to a question, though, that we did submit, and I asked Whitney to hold it to the end. And I think the short version of it was, could we get a SMART goal example for IWPs? And I just want to bring on, I think, Kara. Kara, if we could get you to come on. And do you have an example of a SMART goal that you would be able to share for Whitney and the attendees?
Sure. Thanks, Derek. And just so you know, like I said before, everyone should be individualized. So this is just an example. But let's just say we'll call him George, comes in saying he wants to be a security guard. And he hasn't graduated high school yet. And George is 27. So you'll continue with his short term goals, and he's working as a short order cook right now. So he'll continue working as a short order cook while completing his GED within the next 6 months. Once he's finished his GED, then his long term goals could be something to the effect of he'll enroll in a security certificate training program. He'll continue in the program while working at the cafe. You would put down exactly what you are going to do for George to help him achieve these goals. And then when he successfully completes the program, he'll get a job as a security guard earning SGA. But you do need to list every step of the way what you've done for George, what his goals are, make sure they're goals that are attainable. Let's just pretend that George wants to be a doctor, that's stretching it, a nurse, but he does not want to go to college. You know, well, obviously he probably can't be a nurse, and that's not an attainable goal. So you need to make sure what you write down as a goal and job is something that's attainable for them. And you need to write down specifically what services you're going to provide. And then in your case notes, you obviously need to say what services you provided for them on what day. And then at any time, if their goals have changed, you need to, fix the IWP and have them re-sign it to reflect any changes. Does that help? You're on mute, Derek.
Thank you, Kara. This is Derek. Thank you for the example. If you have a follow-on question, Whitney or others, please provide that in chat. Or again, we can take other questions as well. Looks like we do have a raised hand, so I'm going to go to Nicole and ask you to help us bring that person online.
So we have a, oh gosh, they went away. That's scary. They went away.
Well, I can see that we have Aaron with
yes, it was
raised hand.
Phone number 7811 had the first question that went away, and the mic is now allowed.
So phone number ending in 7811, if you hit *6, you should be able to unmute yourself and ask your question. Go ahead, caller 7811.
Okay. I apologize. It doesn't always automatically unmute me. You mentioned a WISE meeting tomorrow. How do we get that information?
Great. Thanks for the question. That is on the website at choosework.ssa.gov. We'll also drop that in the chat for those that can view chat. You could go to that website, though, and you would find an icon right at the top of the page where you could register through.
Could you repeat that one more time, please?
Sure. choosework.ssa.gov. And we would encourage you to also sign up for the notifications through GovDelivery to become aware of these moving forward as well. Thank you for the question very much.
Our next question is from Aaron. And your mic has been enabled.
So Aaron, you might need to unmute yourself in the upper right corner of your screen if you're using the Teams app. I think we just lost Aaron. Let's try to move to Cheryl next, please. Cheryl Simpson. Cheryl, we've unmuted your line. Now you would have to unmute yourself with your Teams mic.
Okay, I finally got it. Okay, thank you.
Cheryl, if you can provide your EN name and then your question, please.
Sure. My name is Cheryl Simpson. I'm with the Employment Network at the Independence Center located in Norfolk, Virginia. I have a comment and a question. The comment is, it would be good if there was some automated email response whenever we send something to suitability and to the EN website, the email address that we have to send to, because we send stuff and then we never hear back right away that whether you got it or not. And so we're kind of in limbo. So if you could have an automated response added to the email, that would be great. And then my question is, how long should we wait for a response from the EN email address? I've sent things and it's been a month at least, and I haven't heard anything back.
So this is Kara. That's concerning to me. So I will talk with the supervisor in that area. I don't know what's going on there. Also, as far as the automated responses go, first, for the Office of Suitability, that's not our office, so we can't really tell them to do something like that. That's really them. It's another area in the agency. I personally don't like automated responses because people just become numb from them. But I will have the EN service staff send an acknowledgement email when they receive it and let you know, like, you know, we're researching it, we're working on it, you know, whatever happens to be the situation. I don't know what your exact issue is that you haven't heard. If it's a suitability issue, they probably are researching it with the Office of Suitability if it's taking that long. But if it's something more simple, I'm not sure why it's taken that long, but I can have this investigated.
Yeah, I had submitted a request for cloud storage. We have a WIPA project as well, and we got the approval for the WIPA side, and I sent that information, you know, same information I sent for that for the EN to do a separate cloud storage, and I haven't heard anything back.
And what was the name of your EN again? I apologize.
We're with the Independence Center. It starts with an E, and we're located in Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay. I will have them look into it today.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
This is Derek. Thank you very much for the question, Cheryl, and the comment. Let's try Aaron again. Aaron, we believe that you've been unmuted on our side. If you can try to either hit the upper right unmute button on the Teams app or star 6 on your telephone, we'll try to get your question. Go ahead. It doesn't seem to be coming off of mute on Aaron's side. So in the meantime, we'll continue to troubleshoot that. If we can move to Justin. Justin has a hand raised. We've unmuted the line on our side. Justin, if you could unmute, it looks like you have. Go ahead, Justin. Please identify your EN first and then your question.
My EN is Goodwill of Orange County here in California. Good morning, everybody. My question is also actually in regards to the suitability process and specifically the information provided on the Ticket to Work website. A little while back, I was linked to a URL on the tickettowork.sca.gov website titled Service Provider Foundation's Learning Modules. And among those modules, there is a section called Completing the Suitability Process, and it gives you step-by-step instructions on how to do it. We followed, my manager followed the suitability instructions, sent the information as an encrypted zip file to the dchr.ope.suitability.ssa.gov email address. However, it had been at this point 2.5 months with no response. We contacted some staff over at SSA, and I was given a completely different email address to contact instead. So are we making, we as the royal we, everybody at Ticket to Work and SSA, are we making sure that information is updated properly to staff, ENs, whoever who may be looking into the programs and making sure everything is going to go smoothly for everyone? Because as far as I can tell, it's not updated information at all.
Hi, Derek. I know you're like, who's taking this? So as far as, like I said before, I agree. Suitability is a thorn for all of us. So I was just asking someone on my staff to get the correct email address. So sorry.
The email address I was given is dchr.ope.csps.contractors.suitability@ssa.gov. That's the email that I was provided, yes, and my manager, I have also attempted to send that, and now we are waiting on a response from them. So
okay.
I'm just wanting to make sure that all...
So this is, I apologize. So this is in reference to somebody on your staff obtaining suitability, correct?
Correct.
And it's this been 2.5 months since you've applied.
It has been 2.5 months since we originally applied by sending the email to just the standard DCHR OPE suitability at SSA.gov. It has been maybe about 1.5 weeks or so since we received and forwarded the same information off to the contractors.suitability.
I've never heard of that contractor's email. The one we use is DCHR.OPE.suitability@ssa.gov. But just to help you, you can send it to EN Service and put attention Natalie on it.
Yeah, Natalie had provided an email in the chat before
I think she send
the request information to her.
Yeah, absolutely. And she will try to guide it through the process.
Okay. Something else that, and this is just a general note for you because you mentioned it before, the subject line of the idea of having the must-haves in the email subject line, that would be good to have on the suitability request email as well. Because as far as my manager was aware, he sent the subject line suitability request and then the DUNS numbers for our programs, not the suitability request and then the PID numbers, which we weren't even aware was a thing yet. So
I'm talking about when you're sending stuff to EN Service, when you're sending stuff to suitability, actually the Office of Suitability, they don't even, DUNS number and PID number, it's the same number. So it's very confusing right now, and we apologize for that. But they actually use your contract number, your ward number, the one that's SS00.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, the contract number. Yeah, we have that one.
That's what the Office of Suitability uses.
Is that what we should be putting into the subject line instead?
If you're sending something directly to the Office of Suitability, when you're sending something to EN Service, we would like to know who you are. So your EN name, your PID number, which is the same thing as your DUNS number. So it's just not called DUNS anymore. And the state you're from. You can just put like Maryland. We live in Maryland, MD, we would put. And it just makes it easier for us to put it to the right person. But if you're sending something for Natalie, I don't want to confuse people, and I apologize. But if you're sending something for her through the box, all you have to do is say, attention, Natalie, in the subject line. Okay. And, you know, just make sure she knows. And your PID number or name would be helpful, too. You don't have to put your state in that situation. But okay. I don't want 50,000 people sending stuff to Natalie either. It should just be like, when she asked, or if it's not getting done and it needs to be brought to a higher level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, the first time we submitted to the original email address was April 19th. Nothing has happened.
Yeah, you should have heard something.
Or actually, I'm sorry. Not April 19th. No, there was one also in January that apparently was partially incorrect, but we did send it to that email address. But okay. So it might be a matter of waiting at this point, but we will still contact Natalie.
I would contact Natalie. Yeah, and she will let you know if something's being done incorrectly, and she can find out from the Office of Suitability what's going on.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Kara. This is Derek. Let's try Aaron. I think, Aaron, your line is unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, just identify your EN and then ask your question, please.
Yes, I run Rehability LLC in the Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington area. My question is, I've noticed that when I call the Ticket to Work help desk to ask questions about payments, that they no longer are able to give me or give us suggestions of when to bill. Maximus used to do that. And, you know, I have clients that, you know, start work and stop work and, you know, they have fragmented earnings and sometimes they're under the trial work level or under SGA. And so I'm just wanting to ask why you have this policy, because it's really frustrating. It's like sometimes it's like shooting in the dark. You know, we bill and it's, you know, rejected. It's the wrong month. And it's like, why can't you give us information up front, because you have access to all the earnings records, we don't, just to make it easier so we don't have to try three times to get the right month. Maximus, again, used to help us when we called the help desk, but now I'm told that cannot be done.
So thanks for the question. I appreciate you sticking with us to ask the question.
Yeah, sorry
because
about
I know that took you
audio.
Some energy, but we got you through. yeah. I'm not going to be able to answer your question immediately for you, but what we'd like to do, since we have Kara, do you want to?
No, I think this one should go to Katie. She's the payments manager, so I don't.
Okay. Well, Katie, Katie's. Go ahead, Katie. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This, you know, we try to keep our payments questions right to the all EM payments call. So I would, you know, direct you at this point. I don't want to take time on this call for payments questions. I do want to tell, you know, please do reach out via email and we can try to answer you individually about that. Or we could have this as one of the topics on our upcoming all EM payments call. But I really would not want to take time, you know, to kind of discuss this on this call.
You can't just give a brief overview, because sometimes I can't make the all payments call because I do other work for Social Security. So, you know, can you give a brief summary why the change in policy?
Well, I don't think it's a change in policy because, like I said, it is very specific, right, to a specific ticket holder or specific issue. I don't know if you are relying on pay or not relying on pay.
From what I see, It's a difference with the ticket to work help desk, and I don't know if other ENs have noticed, but I've been told when I call, and my sister helps with billing, that, you know, no, we can't give you that information. Well, what do you mean? The Maximus help desk used to say, okay, this is what we see for these months, and this has happened a few times. I'm like, okay, there's some policy that they're going by. And again, it's frustrating for us because, you know, we're just trying to do the actual work, and then the billing is, you know, can be very painful if you all don't help us to say, okay, this is the month we see, bill it then. And that's why we call the help desk, you know, we need help with the billing, you know, because sometimes people are all over the place.
I would say prior to the ticket portal in 2015, right, it was harder for you to figure out what was available, right, to see earnings in the last 24 months, to see the history. You know, you are supposed to be tracking beneficiary earnings. And, you know, like I said, ePay is also there to facilitate that. Like I said, this would definitely be something I'm happy to flesh out and explain further on in the All EN Payments call, or we could send a blast with more information. I just don't want to take time on this call because we are at 2:31 already. I'm happy to redirect it or rehab this conversation somewhere else. You know, probably you reached someone at Maximus who was willing to do that for you. It was outside of their scope. It was outside of their swim lane. And you were very lucky to have that person helping you with that. But that is actually not our policy. So, you know, that's the best I can give you. But we can certainly discuss it on the next call and in another forum.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron, for the question, and thank you, Katie, for coming on to provide the response. I appreciate that there was some other chat around the topic and that there's some ongoing questions. It is the end of our quarterly All EN call, and on behalf of the ticket program manager, I'd like to thank you for attending today, and I'd like to thank our presenters from Social Security and our partners for providing their presentations and content. Looking ahead, we'll have our next EN call on August 23rd. If we can go to the next slide, please. It will be on August 23rd at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If you do have questions as a follow-on to today, we encourage you to email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And like today, if you have a topic that you would like to request that brought Mary Ellie to us today, we encourage you to also email topics for the next All EN call to enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Thank you all for attending today, and have a good rest of your day. This ends the May All EN call.